next week's parish as well. These are all questions, I think, that we all ask ourselves, and rightfully so, worry about in so many different aspects, in so many different ways. We were zeiche to meet together 3 times already, different sessions from different views, different angles, different topics, but of course all in Inyanei Chinuch. The feedback was tremendous, the emails that came in, the thank yous, and even the complaints were pretty much, why did we change dates so many times, which, trust me, it wasn't something we wanted to do, but just had to do. But that alone, if that was the only complaint, we're doing pretty good. And that's a tremendous sign, and I think we owe a tremendous hakaras hatov to Rabbi Klein, who's actually one of the panelists tonight from Torah Maseira, for spearheading and helping so much behind the scenes and making sure that every detail, especially tonight's evening, is worked out so well. Just want to share with you a thought that I think encompasses every one of the sessions we had, and certainly tonight's session of questions and answers of perfecting our parenting. And that is, in this week's parasha, when Yosef HaTzadik is lost, he's looking for his brothers. Amazingly, he doesn't use it as an excuse. The Rambam points this out. Okay, I can't find them, let me go home. It wasn't something he wanted to really do. But his father told him to do it, so he did it. No excuses. And he meets this Ish. Rashi tells us it was Malach Gavriel. And he tells him, I'm asking you, so there's an extra word here. What's the lemar? It should have said, the man went over to him and asked him, what are you looking for? What's obviously, if he asked him a question, he was talking to him. The Sifsei Tzadik says something that's so penetrating. It's something I've told to so many people, and honestly, I've told it to myself so many times when it comes to Chinuch Habonim. He says that Rashi tells us already, this was Malach Gavriel. He knew everything. A Malach knows everything. He knew exactly where Yosef was headed. Yosef didn't know, but he knew. He saw that Yosef was about to get thrown into a pit, sold by his brothers, and for 17 years is going to live literal Gehenna. And there's going to be challenges and struggles and nisyonis beyond. He turned to Yosef and he said, he beseeched from him, like we find in the Megillah, she'losi bakashosi. Lamar, make sure to say to yourself. Lamar wasn't another word of saying vayishaleihu. He begged him, Lamar, Yosef, make sure to ask yourself every morning, ma tevakesh, where do you want to be in life? Where are you headed? You want to be on the choshen with your brothers? Lamar, every morning ask yourself, where do I want to go? And only if you do that are you going to be able to overcome your struggles. If every morning you look in the mirror and say, Yosef, today is going to be a rough one. This guy in jail is going to start up with me, and Ashes Paitifa is going to pull me this way. But remember what you want. Where do you want to go? Where do you want to get to at the end of your life? If you ask yourself that question every day, you'll succeed. If you don't have a vision, if you don't create a mission in life where you want to go, not going to happen. I think for ourselves, for our children, we have challenges every day. All right, it's only today. So today, I'll let him watch this. Today, I'll let him do this. Today, I'll ignore my son. Today, I'll let my daughter get away with this. I'll deal with it next week. Ma tevakesh, where do we want to go? We have to recognize every day to ask ourselves that question. Is it worth it? Is this yes worth it? Is this no worth it? Everything that we're doing, is it worth it? When do I say something? When do I not? And these are questions that we also have to ask every day. And I think that's why such a session is so important. Because ma tevakesh, the questions we're asking, need answers from experience, mechanchim, rabbonim, choshuvim, and we're zeicha tonight to have a panel. Firstly, Achanachan Chava, Baruch Hashem, but Rabbi Klein, you're right on my right, from Torah Maseira, Rabbi Shmuel Klein, who's a mechanach for decades and decades, first in Toronto. He leads from the leading mechanchim in Torah Maseira and has authored books. Many of you probably read him every week in the Hamadia, just genius amount and the scope of his knowledge and chinuch has just been tremendous. Rabbi Ari Neuwirth is a well-known mechanach in Brooklyn, New York. He's the Ram in Yeshiva Derech HaTorah. And I can tell you, from being a Manal and Flapish for many years, to be able to be a mechanach over there, specifically the types of boys that he deals with, not easy. I don't think any mechanach has it easy, but with Rabbi Neuwirth, Shmoy Hoylech Lofanov, somebody who understands with a pikchis what chinuch abonim abonim is, and I'm sure we're going to enjoy very much. And I'm not going to say achron achron chavah, but definitely most well known to all of us here in Chicago is Rav Tversky Shlita, who I can say is a manal, not only as, if I could say, a friend, but to be able to deal with Rabbi Tversky as a rav of so many talmidim, so many families, is not only a pleasure, his ne'imus and his pikchus and his patience, but it's a cheshivus to be able to have a shaykh to such a very chashuv person. I'm going to say personally, achron achron chaviv, to introduce the moderator for tonight, the mashgiach of our yeshiva, Rabbi Tenenbaum, who is not only a mechanach and a talmid chacham and the most pleasurable person I could ask for to deal with, but just as he's the therapist of so many talmidim and parents, he's mine too. And when I get to sit down on his couch and talk to him, and the pearls of wisdom and chizuk that come from him are something we'll all get a little taste of tonight. So I'd like to ask Rabbi Tenenbaum, the mashgiach, to lead the program and enjoy the evening.
And thank you for allowing me to stand here in front of such cheshuvim, such mechanchim, rabbanim, parents, wonderful parents that entrust us with their zisa kinderlich. It's a tremendous chus to work in such a beautiful maisid. The manaf didn't thank for this whole parenting theories series, which the manal is the brain behind it. The manal together with Torah Mesor and ATT. So we want to thank the manal, Torah Mesor, the ATT, for putting this together. I feel as a parent, I gained tremendous out of these sessions, even though I wasn't able to be here by the last session. But the first two, we implemented many of the tips that were brought forth. On the note that I got, I was asked to give over two or three points of chinuch. After I worked on preparing it, I read it again, and it said 2 to 3 minutes. We're going to try to keep to the 2 to 3 points, and as close as possible to the 2 to 3 minutes, because we do want to hear the answers to the questions that were raised. Two nakudas that I want to bring up, and one is understanding ourselves, and the second one is understanding our children. In order to be able to understand our children, there has to be a clear understanding of who I am. The Heilige Kli Yakam Parshas told us brings down. On the Pasuk, Ve'ele Toldes Yitzchak ben Avram, Avram Hoyledes Yitzchak. These are the children of Yitzchak, the son of Avram. Avram gave birth to Yitzchak. In fact, the Heilige Kli Yakam, if it just said, told us Yitzchak ben Avram, these are the kids of Yitzchak ben Avram. Why do you start again? Avram held us Yitzchak. Avram gave birth to Yitzchak. He just said. So the Kli Yakam answers that since the parasha beforehand, it's brought down about Yishmael. Yishmael was ben Avram as well. Avram had a child, Yitzchak, and Avram had a child, Yishmael. Yishmael was ben Avram. Asha Yolda Hagar Hamitzris. That was given birth by Hagar Hamitzris. Zakta Kli Yakar, that when a parent gives birth to a child, the parent gives off the genes to the children. The child is born with the characteristic traits of the parents. The midas of the parents, the genes of the parents, go down to the child. The Eila told us, Yitzchak ben Avram, you want to know, Yitzchak was ben Avram, but you should know that Avram hoiled as Yitzchak. Avram was the one that his genes dominated Yitzchak. Yitzchak, his nature, his midos came from his father Avram, whereas Yishmael got most of his genes asher yolda Hagar haMitzris, from Hagar the Mitzris. So when you see a child act a certain way, Zokta Heli Kliyakar, you should know that it comes from whoever gave birth to the child. The job of Mechanchim, writes the Kliyakar, is to take the child with his strengths and his weaknesses, his, her. We work in the boys' school, so my first tongue is going to be his. We take the child with his strengths and his weaknesses, not that was created by the Rebbe, and not that was created by the teacher, and not that was created by the school, the manal, the mashgiach. What was created, that was given birth by the parents. Take this child and try to modify, try to make it work for him. Try to make make it as sweet as possible. We're not necessarily looking to change the makeup of the child. We're looking to teach him, based on his own makeup, his or her own makeup, how to navigate through the struggles of life. So in order to be able to understand our children, we have to understand ourselves. Do I understand who I am? Do I understand my strengths and weaknesses? Do I know what gets me upset? Do I know what gets me angry? Do I know when my mood changes? Do I know my mood swings? I question myself from time to time. At least I can go ask Rabbi Muller, what do you think? Am I weird or not? And sometimes it's good to be interesting and different. I don't trust myself when it comes to making decisions for my child's chinuch. Because I don't know if I fully understand my child, because I don't fully understand myself in all areas. I try to. I'll ask. My yechiel is graduating B'ez Hashem this year. We have to send him to yeshiva. What yeshiva should I send my child to? Yechiel hasn't left my side since he was entered yeshiva. I see him day in and day out in yeshiva. Yet when it comes to making such a strong decision, which yeshiva is best, matim, fits best for my child, I don't trust myself with making that decision. There's tremendous negias. I don't understand myself fully. So I met with the manal, I met with the rabbeim of Yechiel that understand my child without negias, and asked them, I need your advice. I need your guidance. Help me understand. I could discuss with the Rav in the shul as well, who knows him from seeing him Shabbos, not as much as his mechanchim know him, not as much as the manalim, the rabbeim know him, but he knows him as well, so I can discuss it with him also. But when it comes to finding out something about chinuch, I don't trust myself. I may not understand my child because I don't understand all my nuances. Someone that's in prison can't get himself out of there. I don't understand fully. I'm not sure if I can repeat the story, but I will. We recently had a parent. Now is the season of prospective parents come to yeshiva to check out the yeshiva and see if we want to enroll our child into the boys' school, into the girls' school. Again, not to give any hints about anyone and not to... And the parent walks in, they want to register their daughter, and in order to register the daughter, they have to go through a Vada Chinuch approval. The manal and myself are sitting in the meeting. The woman walks in with her husband, and the woman is wearing a snood that covers the back of her head. And she's sitting in front of us, and we're discussing. She went through our system, our school system. She wants to enroll her daughter in our school. Looking at her, the manal asked, so tell me, there are options in the city. Why would you want to send your daughter to our school? And she looks a bit puzzled and she says, your school symbolizes tznius, hashkafa. I want hashkafa. I want the tznius that your school teaches. We couldn't make a bracha in the room. Who can tell this lady, I'm sorry, You're contradicting yourself. Now, if it's a lady that comes from a background that doesn't know differently, okay, she wants to grow. But you're someone that went through our system. You're a graduate. From one of the school systems that understands the system. And to come that way, and you're talking about tzniyus while you're not sitting with tzniyus in front of them now. How do we tell someone like that you're making a mistake without insulting them? We can't, right? It's impossible. You can't. So the terrace is that we have to find a rav. We have to find someone that we can trust, that knows us, that understands us, that we can ask them, are we making the right decision? An outsider that if they tell you, no, you're not going to get insulted. Asay l'cha rav, k'nei l'cha chaver. Shrap them now in the Sefer Pirkei Avos Medor L'dor, which I encourage everybody to get. It was out of stock, they just reprinted it. Shrap them now, brought down from the Meforshim. K'nei l'cha chaver. Asay l'cha rav. Make sure you have a rav that understands your needs. Make sure you have a friend that can understand you, l'cha dafka for you. Someone that understands the family dynamic. Someone that understands the nature of you and your children and your family. Someone that you trust. If they'll say something, you won't feel insulted. You'll find it as someone that's looking to help you out. Someone that understands your needs. So Rabbi say again, we encourage everyone. Don't feel embarrassed to ask questions. Am I parenting my child the right way? Am I making the right parenting decisions? What do you suggest? And yeah, we're not the experts that know all the answers. But definitely it could start a good conversation. And be prepared if you hear something that you may not feel so comfortable with, that we're doing it because we want the best for your child. If you understand yourself, you understand your struggles, you'll be able to understand your child. It will give us an easier time to deal with your children. We are your partners. That's nekuda number one. Nekuda number two. Understanding your child. I heard a beautiful verse in Rosh Hashanah, brought down from the Baal HaTosfos in the Torah L'Torah. When Yaakov was born, V'yodo Yechezes Ba'ekev Esav. Ba'kev Esav. Yaakov was holding on to the heel of Esav as he was born. What's the significance? What does it mean? Dr. Shekel, in the name of the Torah L'Torah and the Baal HaTosfos, Yaakov Avinu, baby Yaakov, as he was born, wanted to save his mother from tsar leida, childbirth pain. She shouldn't have to go through the pain twice. She went through it once when she gave birth to Esav. Let me hold on to him that it should be one birth. I don't want to cause pain to my mother. Heilig Baal HaTosfos right. When the Yaakov Avinu was born as a baby, I chas v'shom do not want to cause extra pain to my mother. Let me grab on to Esav. Our children today are B'nai Yaakov. B'nois Yaakov. Beis Yaakov. Our children today don't want to cause any pain to our parents. Our children don't want to cause any pain to the mechanchim, to the mechanchis, to the menal, to the principals. They look to please. That's the nature of children. They look to please. Let us try to understand them. When a child acts a certain way, the child is communicating a message. The job of the adult is to figure out what's the message that the child is trying to communicate. Usually, what the child is saying is not what the child means. And trust us, we have many examples. When the child comes home and says, my Rebbe hates me, and my teacher hates me, and classroom is bored, we will tell you the 10 other things that they told us in school. 10 other things that they told us in yeshiva. But we don't look at the actual message that they're saying. We're not looking at the verbal communication. We're looking to understand what is troubling the child. What can we do to help this child? Communication is extremely difficult. It's one of the most hardest things to figure out to have a down pat is communication. Men have one language. Women have another language, and children have a third language. And the languages keep on fluctuating, keep on changing. Never try to figure out your spouse, I don't understand what you're talking about. And you don't sleep at night, what are you saying? Can you imagine the child? You don't understand what your child is saying. When the child is crying out something, we have to figure out what is the message that the child is telling us. So let's try to reword sentences that we have heard from, messages that we have heard from Talmidim. I hate my parents. Probably, chances are, you probably just told them no to something. Or you may have disciplined them. Instead of saying, I'm a bit disappointed or it's hard for me, they don't have the verbal dictionary to say. They'll say it, it shouldn't be hurtful. We will redirect them how to say it nicely. My parents, these are comments that I actually heard from children recently. My parents are always on their phone. I come home, they're on the phone. I need help homework, they're on the phone. Parent to parents. So this child wants special interaction with their parents. They want to interact more with their parents. But they don't have the verbal skills how to say it. My parents are weird. What does that mean? Now, it could be that the child feels that the parents and the child, they don't share the same interest. The child has one interest. The child has interest in sports. And the parents are sports. Who cares about sports? What sports? Sports is nothing. Some calories are hitting a wall and spinning. What sports? So the child takes that message that, we're not on the same page. We're not understanding each other. Or it could be, we have the opposite side as well. Parents are really into sports. The child is not a competitive child. He has no interest in sports. We're going to take you to the ball game. I don't want to go to the ball game. They're not on the same page. Do you understand your child? Do you understand what your child really needs or really wants? Now, there are parents that sometimes do interesting things. A time to get, again, we're not taking the child story as Tarius Maisha. The child says that whenever he gets angry at home, his father has written up big cardboard pages. If he gets angry, the father starts dancing around the house. Kalakayas, come in a Gehenim Shulton, boy. Whoever has kas goes to Gehenim. And my father sees that I'm not happy. He runs around with a poster around the house. Mitzvah gedai l'liyas b'simcha. That means there's zero empathy over there. Do you understand your child's need? Your child is not happy for a reason. Why don't you find out what's going on? And you know what? If we can't figure it out, we pick up the phone. And we call that Aseh Lecha Rav, and we call that Aseh Kneh Lecha Chaver. We call the Mechanech. We call someone that may be able to shed some light. Mrs. Weinhaus Blian Hara has hundreds and hundreds of Talmidas, hundreds and hundreds of experiences when children communicate to be able to help you translate what do they really mean to say. Rabbi Mala has hundreds of translations. Pick up the phone. What's going on? This is going on. These are the symptoms. Can you help me with the underlying issue? I want to finish off with a story that touched me. We have a yeshiva. Interesting. You should hear about it because maybe in New York it could be implemented as well. We have something which is called a nachas note. A nachas note is a pad. A Talmud does something that's praiseworthy. We'll send them to the manal, to the mashkiach, to the principal, we implemented the system so that the Talmidim that are really doing well should also get personal attention of the administration. It shouldn't be only the Talmud that's struggling to get sent out of the class. So the Talmud that's really doing well, and it should be a motivation for the other Talmidim also to try to do something nice that they're going to get recognition from the Manal, the Mashgiach. Now, this happens also not only to be a Nachas note. Also, it says here, he's not feeling well, disruptive, Talmud concerned. But we call it a Nachas note. So whenever we see a Talmud holding one of these notes, oh, you're coming with a Nachas note, that's beautiful. Now, get different things. We're trying to cut down on the candy and the sugar in the school. So we give out different prizes. Yes, it is costing a bit more. It is a bit more expensive, but we're trying. So one of the things that we give out is a pencil. This happens to be one of the pencils that I give out to the Talmud that gets an Nachas note. It says on it, Rabbi Tannenbaum is proud of you. We have it in different colors. The Talmud comes with an Nachas note. He may get a pencil and may get a magnet. I want to discuss the magnets as well. A third grade Talmud comes to me with a nachas not, and he gets a pencil. 2 days later, same third grader comes back with a nachas not. I take a look at the nachas not. The top left line says date. I look at the nachas not, and on the date, it's white outed. And it's written today's date. I look at the nachas not, and I look at the Talmud. And the more I look at it, and the more I look at him, he's starting to blush and starting to feel extremely uncomfortable. The Talmud clearly is lying. Now, normally we keep these nachas not because we put them on the child, on the boy's records. So when he doesn't really do well in class, we can tell him, oh wow, we've seen some 5, 6 nachas notes. Okay, so let's help you get more nachas notes. So we use it as a positive incentive. This Talmud asked if he can take it home because he wants to share it, show it to his mother. So we made a copy of the nachas not and gave him the original that he could take it home to his mother. So here I see white out of date. I look at him, and the more I see him feel more uncomfortable, I pull out the stack of pencils and I ask, which color do you like? And he picked out the color that he liked. And I told him, I do appreciate creativity. You're a creative Talmud. I appreciate it. Take a pencil. He walked out of my office, went back to class, and sat back into class. 10 minutes before dismissal, I pulled him back out of class. I told him, Tzadik, you know, I told you I appreciate creativity, but I also like to understand Talmidim. I want to understand how they work. I'm not upset at all. Can you explain to me just what drove you? What was the factor that made you want another pencil and change the date? So he looks down. He tells me, my younger sister asked me to bring her home a pencil. Child is creative. He is creative. He wants to do something nice to his younger sister. Just imagine my reaction would have been, are you lying to me? Are you stealing? Poor child. His younger sister asked, can you please bring me home such a pencil? So he said, I'm going to figure out how I can get another pencil. So I told the Talmud, as I said before, I do appreciate the creativity, yet in the future, let me know that your sister wants a pencil. I'll make another deal with you. I'll make sure she gets a pencil. We have to be honest. Keep the pencil and give it to your sister. Do we understand our children? Are we quick to judge them? Yaakov Avinu didn't want to make his mother tzal later again. Our children don't want to cause us any agmas nefesh. They work in creative ways. Let's understand them. Let's understand how they function. And if they don't act the way we want them to, let's figure out why not. What's the message that they're communicating to us? I don't want to take more time. And this time we're going to go to the questions. Another time we can speak about the magnets that has a message by itself. Okay. So we have different questions that were given in by different parents. And we'll start off with a question to Rabbi Neuwirth, if you don't mind. Mornings are difficult. We have routine charts and incentives for being ready on time, but it's not helping. How is it best to deal with a child that refuses to get out of bed, or is not getting dressed, or finally gets ready and wants to eat breakfast when it's time to walk out the door? Going to sleep earlier isn't helping. Bedtime is as early as possible, but he doesn't always fall asleep right away.
First of all, I just want to introduce myself. I'm from New York, but I used to live in Minneapolis, and it's a pleasure to be here. I feel like I'm at home again. This question is also connected to another question about the evenings, the nighttime. A question was sent in, how do we establish routines at home for supper, for bedtime, for homework? I'm going to answer it with one answer based on an Igros Moshe. A parent once asked Moshe Feinstein, if I dress my child in pajamas on Shabbos, let's say Shabbos Shuddos time, but I know I'm not putting my child to sleep until after Havdalah, is that considered appearing on Shabbos for after Shabbos? And I thought that was a little bit of a
stretch of a question, but based on Rav Moshe's answer, I saw how incredible it was. Rav Moshe says it's not considered preparing for after Shabbos. Why? He says every smart, intelligent parent knows you never put pajamas on a child and put them straight to bed. It doesn't work. You put pajamas on, and then you tell your child, go play with the train, go play with the dolls, jump around, hop around for a good hour. And then you put them into bed. That's called transition. So therefore, it's not considered preparing on Shabbos for after Shabbos. This is big day Shabbos, the pajamas. Everybody knows you're not going to put your child to sleep right away. So based on this, I want to say the same thing, because Baruch Hashem, I'm a parent and I see with my children, that when we tell our children, you have to go and do homework right now, and they never prepared them, they're reluctant. It becomes a fight. The same thing, it's time to take a bath right now. What do you mean right now? I'm not doing something. You didn't prepare me. You didn't alert me. So based on this, Rav Moshe, if we always keep in mind, you have 15 minutes, you have 30 minutes to do it, most of the time it does work. So bottom line, it's not the answer to everything, but if we keep in mind that we give our kids transition time, this will alleviate a lot of the stress and the fights that go on in the morning and the evening.
Anyone else want to end? Add anything?
Rabbi Tversky, how do you suggest dealing with children who constantly are getting physical with their siblings? How can we break the cycle? Timeouts have not been successful long term.
I'm going to tie this to another question as well. Now, there was another question that came in. Now, the question was, how do we, I believe they're very tied to each other. How do we give our child, how do we give our children self-confidence? Our reactions in such cases where, as Rabbi Tenenbaum described, where children are getting physical with each other or doing anything else that is any type of other trouble. The way we react can have a tremendous impact on our child, our children. If we're going to react in a very negative manner towards the perpetrator, not only, he might accomplish something temporarily, he might let go of his brother or sister, but at the same time, we could be really damaging his self-esteem. And sometimes, you know, our initial reaction when our child is making trouble is to tell him you're a bad boy or you're a bad girl, you shouldn't do this. There's a book written by my uncle, Dr. Abraham Tversky, and he writes about the chinuch that he and his brothers, including my father, received from their father. And my grandfather, he said, never put them down. Never, ever put them down. If they ever did cause any trouble, he would use the words, "Es pasnisht." It's unbecoming. The way you're acting is beneath you. You're better than this. And in such cases where our children are repetitively causing the same kind of trouble, whether it's picking on their siblings or any other type of trouble, the more we put them down and telling them they're the bad boy or the bad girl, then they're just going to continue doing it because that's what they are. But if we try boosting them, boosting their self-confidence, telling them how we think of them, how great they are, that will eventually it will motivate them to not to do things that Tati and Mami or Abba and Ima think are beneath them. My uncle tells a story of he said when he was about 9 years old, there was there was like a Hachnasas Orchem in my grandparents' house. And people used to come, people would come collecting to Milwaukee. We're talking, we're going back into the 1940s. People would come collecting from Europe. They would stay in this Hachnasas Orchem. He said, 1 year Rosh Hashanah, there was a Rav from Russia that stayed in there, that stayed in the basement. He stayed in the Hachnasas Orchem. And this Rav asked my uncle, do you want to play chess? It was Rosh Hashanah afternoon. Would you like to play a game of chess? And my uncle said to him, a nine-year-old, he said to him, chess on Rosh Hashanah? So Rav said, yeah, there's nothing wrong with playing chess on Rosh Hashanah. So he had a game of chess with him. My uncle was very, very good at chess, even at 9 years old, and he beat him. So anyway, word got to my grandfather that they played chess on Rosh Hashanah. I heard this directly from my uncle. My uncle told me that he was summoned into his father's office. He said he walked into the office, and his father picked up his eyes from the sefer and said, Shia, hast gespielt Schach Rosh Hashanah? Did you play chess on Rosh Hashanah? He said he didn't have to say anything else. It was just silence. He didn't answer. And then he looked up and said, "Aschach gewonnen." Did you at least win? But he said, my father could have said to me, just a change of tone. He could have said to me, "Shia, hast gespielt Schach Rosh Hashanah." He should have just, instead of asking me a question, did you play chess on Rosh Hashanah? He said he could have just said it to me in a condescending manner. You played chess on Rosh Hashanah. He said I would have been shattered. He said by asking me the question, by saying to me, did you play chess on Rosh Hashanah? What that meant was, I'm surprised. You're much bigger than that. You know much better than that. He said it made me feel good. And the message got across. So whenever there are two ways of saying something, we always have to figure out how to say it in a manner that's going to boost the child instead of put him down. And that is what's going to deter the child from repeating such behavior. Because mommy thinks it's beneath me.
Yeah, Rabbi Klein, I realize the significance of davening and saying Tehillim and the effect it has on children when they see their mother davening. I try to set up my children with games and toys so that I can daven when the house is calm. I try to say some Tehillim as well. Baruch Hashem, there are disruptions, and as much as my children know to wait until I'm finished so that I can talk to them, I often wonder if my children will come to resent tefillah, since this is causing their mother to be preoccupied and unavailable for them at times.
So before I answer the question, and it's a big question, Rabbi Tenenbaum placed one of these magnets. He didn't speak about them because he was going over time, but he put a magnet, so I just looked at it, and it's a really uncanny little gadget. There's four states of mind: stressed, tense, normal, and calm, and you're supposed to place your thumb on the black spot, and it tests based on, I guess, pulse or whatever, heat, it tests what you are. And it says here that I was normal. So my only regret is that I did not bring my wife on this trip, because contrary to her protestations, it says that I'm normal, so there you go. Okay. As far as the halacha of davening Saint Tilim, as opposed to taking care of the kids when that's necessary, and it usually is, I think, right? So there's two ways of attacking the issue. One is with halacha, and one is with hashkofa. In terms of halacha, it's not so poshut that a woman is mechuyev in the same manner as a man to daven. The Gemara says that just like a man needs chaye, he needs life, he has to entreat the Rabbeinu Shleiman for life and for sustenance, so a woman also has to. But that's a chazal, not necessarily kaveh, doesn't necessarily establish the halacha. The extreme in halacha, I guess, is the Mishnah Berurah, the paskins that a woman should daven shacharis and mincha every single day. I've always maintained that it's usually possible for a lady to find a few minutes to daven shacharis. Doesn't have to mean from Ma Toivu all the way following the Siddur till after Elena, with certain choice parts of davening and mincha. It's not that difficult to find the time of day, but let's say it is difficult. So there's not necessarily a hechrich. We're not obligated to say that the woman is mechuyev to daven, and possibly mechuyev only to daven once, and possibly even not a whole tefillah. There's a tefillah ketzorah that a woman can say. So it's not so poshut. On the other hand, if you want to be makbid, find a time when it's not really getting in the way of other things. Now, in terms of hashkofa, I got to say like this. And I may be wrong. This may be only a man's perspective, but I'm married to somebody who's not a man. For a long time, so I pick up a few little tidbits along the way. And my understanding is, as choshuv as a woman can make her life in other respects, such as career and fulfillment in other venues, etc., etc., I believe that a woman more than a man finds and achieves the greatest fulfillment in her life through her children. Now, just by a nod of heads, am I right or wrong? Okay. Anyone say that I'm wrong? Okay, so yeah. So the eyes have it, as they say in Parliament. That means that if you are in a matzav where you're choosing between being metapel properly with your child or your children when that is a need, choosing between that and davening, which is not yet established as a clear halachic obligation, I don't know, but it's a no-brainer. You don't give up that which is the most magnificent source of fulfillment in your life in deference for something which is important, but not as important. Will it cause the child to resent the davening? Maybe or maybe not. I don't know. But you just may not be doing what you're supposed to be doing in that situation. So my encouragement, and my wife, Baruch Hashem, follows this, on her own, not because of me, find the time to daven. There's always time when the kids don't necessarily need you for that 5 or 10 minutes, be it for shacharis and be it for mincha. But if you absolutely cannot find that time, your kids come first. Whether they end up resenting it or not, don't do it.
If I could just add to that, Nakuda, when we spoke about communication, a child communicates to the parent a message. If the child is upset that the parent is davening and they can't get the attention of the parent, then there is a way to tell the child, somehow tell the child that we will discuss it a bit later to find out if we could, this is my davening time and this is the time that I want to talk to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If the child can't understand that, then there could be a separate skill that has to be worked on with the child. Now, as we said before, children communicate messages. The message could be that I'm lacking the skills of problem solving. I'm lacking the skills of patience. I'm lacking the skills of some skills children pick up from osmosis, and some skills have to be taught. And it all depends. Different children have different needs. So that could be a message as well. If you see a child start resenting the fact that a parent is davening, is there an underlying piece that should be looked at and should be worked out? Any skills that have to be worked on? Besides the davening piece. Rabbi North, next question. How do we teach our children to deal with disappointment? At times, the reactions do not seem to be appropriate for what has taken place.
This is a huge question.
I deal with it in my yeshiva. We have a lot of programs, incentive programs, and when a boy doesn't make the program, he's very disappointed. We have a program where if you attend Shacharis on time for 100 days, we take them to Orlando for 2 days. Now, could you imagine what a boy feels like if he messes up? He got 3 chances to miss. And one boy, on the 4th chance, he just didn't come on time. And he was ice mensch. I'm saying he was really, really way beyond his response into not attending this trip. Now, I understand him. He wasn't the only one. There are many boys who don't make it. 65% of the boys make it, 35% don't. The 35%, life goes on. He was the boy that life did not go on at all, at all. And he got me thinking on this topic a year ago, and I wrote already 50 pages on it. 50 pages worth of notes. I'm not going to speak 50 pages worth, but condense it. We see in the Torah that our Avos and Imos faced many, many disappointments. Let's say Leah right now faced a disappointment at the beginning. She thought she was going to marry Esav and not Yaakov. And then they get switched. And what happens? Yaakov loves Rachel more. How does she feel? She can't feel great. Not only that, the 7 years she watched Yaakov work for Rachel. How did she feel during those 7 years? That's a tremendous amount of disappointment. And now we're getting to Yosef. How about Yosef's disappointment? He is the choice son, the most loved son, the most beloved son of Yaakov Avinu. And what happens? He's thrown into a pit. He's sold to Mitzrayim. He doesn't see his father. That's a huge disappointment. But what happened? What is the common thread woven between the Avos and the Imos and Yosef HaTzadik? Is that they grew from their disappointment. Look how much they grew. Leah, she gave birth to most of the Shvatim. And most of the Shvatim, we're here today because of them. The kings came because of Leah. We're called Yehudim because of Leah. Leah was the real mother. It got switched from Rachel to Leah. Why? Because she took care of her disappointment. Yosef became the viceroy. He saved Klal Yisrael because of the way he responded to disappointment. These are the things that we need to point out to our children. There's disappointment throughout the Torah. The Torah is our blueprint how to deal with it. Validate them. Yes, I understand. It's very disappointing not to go on a trip. It's very disappointing to lose something, whatever it is they're facing in their lives. But if we teach them through the prism of Torah how to deal with disappointment, they're going to grow from it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu treats us like a grape. What do you do to a grape? You squeeze and you squeeze and you squeeze. Why? To get out the best juices, to make the most sweetest, best wine. The same thing with us. HaKadosh Baruch Hu squeezes us like a grape. Why? To bring out the best juices and to make the best wine. And this is the lesson that we have to impart to our children. Disappointment is squeezing a good grape to make the best wine.
Is it easier to do it for a 40-year-old boy who wants to go to Disney to see that something good is coming out of him not going to Disney? It's a very hard thing. Even if you pointed to the Torah, if I may add, of course everything is from the Torah, but maybe a parent talking about their own disappointments in their childhood and saying how things at the end worked out, because Leah Emanu, and how do I know how Yosef felt when he was 17, to hear, yeah, you actually like to hear something going wrong. If you're not going to Disney, that's much worse.
Thank you, Rabbi Muller. I appreciate that. So two things. First of all, this boy, the next year, did make it to the trip. So he did learn from it.
What do I have to do to go?
He did learn from it. I worked with this boy and his Rebbe throughout the year. And the following year, he made it. And he was a changed person, a really changed person. But like Rabbi Muller is saying, that there are a few things we have to do as parents. Number one is model optimism ourselves. Do our children see what happens to us as parents when we're faced with a disappointment in our lives? Do we become ice mensch? Do we break down? Do we not get over it? So then what do we expect from our children? But if our children see our response to rejection, they'll follow in the same path. So that's one way. Also, we face disappointment that our children may not see. If we share with them stories that happened, let's say we didn't get into the yeshiva high school we wanted to, we didn't get into the seminary we wanted to, that's disappointment. We got rejected shirch-wise once, twice, 3 times. What could be worse? We got over it. But we have to teach our children how we got over those disappointments in our lives. And I think with those messages and those examples, they're going to learn from it. And I think just lastly, by the way, humor them. Sometimes we'll show them a point in our life that was so disappointing and how in the end it worked out. We got a good laugh. Share with them. You know what? You're going to laugh at this one day.
Just want to be moisif to everything that's been said on this very important topic. Number one, Shlomo Melech says, Aposuk Sheva Yipol Tzadik V'kom. Pasuk Pshat, that the Tzadik can even fall, that means fail or be disappointed in himself, seven times, but human beings have in themselves the resiliency to spring back and to come back to life. That's one Pshat. That's the Pasuk Pshat. Ein mikri yoytze midei pshuta. Rabbi Yitzchak Hutner, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, said, it's much deeper than that. Sheva yipol tzadik, because of the nefilos that a tzadik will have, because of the fact that he has failed even miserably on occasion, v'kom, that is what gives him the koyach. It's specifically the disappointments that one can have in life that gives him going forward, the stamina, the fortitude to rise to better things. That's number one. Number two, I want to quote for you a Beferish Memorif of Winston Churchill, who said, one of my favorite lines, he was a Pikeach Otsum, Chochum Bagoyim Tamin, he said, the definition of success is going from failure to failure without losing enthusiasm. That needs no further commentary. And the third thing that I'll share with you is an interesting fact that I read recently, that in Finland, I don't know why Dafka in Finland, but they have a day of celebration, it's a national holiday since the 1970s, and I think it's called the Day of Failures, where people are encouraged to either think about, focus on, or even share with others the failures that they have had as a means of burying those failures in their subconscious and moving forward, moving higher. So to be disappointed and to fail, that's actually great, as long as it's not allowed to fester in the person as a source of misery, as a source of being sad and depressed. Build on it, and it's a gewaltige thing. It turns into beautiful things in the future.
Thank you. I definitely gained some good points over here. In the yeshiva, we deal with it more with coming from a psychoeducational point. We will, if we know that the Talmud struggles with disappointment, before we give him some disappointing news, we'll let him know that we do recognize that sometimes when you hear something that you're not prepared for, you have a hard time dealing with it. So I want to prepare you for it. This is what we have to do. But I know that you may have a hard time dealing with it. Again, bringing that subconscious to the conscious will help the child or the child be prepared and help him understand that he deals with this. He doesn't have an easy time dealing with disappointment. So now knowing that, making him aware of that beforehand, will help him deal with the actual disappointment. That's how we deal with Shiva. Rabbi Tversky, I want to maintain a close relationship with my children, but yet I want to set limits. Being that getting children to do what they're supposed to involves a struggle, how can I balance the setting limits and maintaining the relationship while still getting children to do what they need to do?
I could tell you a tactic that my wife and I came up with in our family. It actually worked wonders. The kids were leaving their things all over the place. They weren't making their beds in the morning. When they came home from school, they were dropping their backpack at the front entrance, dropping their coats on the couch. Their clothes were strewn all over the place. I know this doesn't happen in your house, but it happens. They would get up from the table without clearing their plates. So I'm telling you this, Mamash worked wonders. We came up we printed our own currency called Twersky dollars. And at every Sunday, distribute to each child 10 Twersky dollars. Now, throughout the week, if someone else needs to make your bed, whoever gets there first can do it. If someone else needs to make your bed, you need to pay them a Twersky dollar. Or if somebody picks up your coat or your backpack and puts it where it belongs, then you have to pay them a Twersky dollar. Even if it's mommy or tati, you have to pay them a Twersky dollar. Worse than losing a Twersky dollar is that one of the other kids should get it. It works wonders. And the same thing applies. Somebody has to pick up a clear off your plate. And then every Sunday, before we give out the new Twersky dollars, I buy some nosh at the store, nosh that they don't ordinarily have. And they get to buy, depending on how many, I put a price tag on each one of those, each one of the noshes. And they can each, according to how many Twersky dollars they have left, they can buy, or now that could be they have much more because they got from everybody else. And also, if they do extra chores in the house that they didn't need to do, they get extra Twersky dollars also. So it works half of a fell. It's a great motivator. So if you want to get your kids to do what they're supposed to do. Without, and it's fun too.
They're not teaching them that if I don't get paid, I don't do it. Like, what would happen if when they're sick, they're going to ask their husbands for Goldberg dollars or Weiss dollars? What happens then? Are we training them to do everything only for the prize?
So it's not, they're not getting things, they're not, you mean for the extra things that they do?
Yeah, for the extra, even for that. Like meaning if I'm not going to get paid, so then why should I clear off my plate? Meaning in school where there's not. It works to keep the house clean, and I guess.
Right, Widavka didn't use real money for that reason. Widavka made it the Monopoly money for.
Some of us have the same deal.
If I could just add, like Niall said in the yeshiva, we don't have rules of analysis in the yeshiva, we have expectations. So Talmidim know that we have an expectation, and this is what we expect to live up to. I'm a bit disappointed if you weren't able to live up to that expectation. Hopefully next time around you will be able to live up to the expectation. But the child knows that the parent has a certain expectation. I expect your coat to be hanging when you come home. And he didn't hang it up. I'm a bit disappointed that it's not hanging. Hopefully next time, tomorrow when you come home, you will. So the model is we have an expectation. You should know what my expectation. And with the belief that Talmidim and children look to please, they don't want to cause the parents extra pain. Hopefully, they'll live up to the expectation. Rabbi Klein, to what extent should a parent try to monitor and manage outside influences that are not bad per se, but are slightly below the family standard? I'm referring specifically to the case that are coming from those very close to the child and family, such as grandparent, aunt, cousin, or neighbor, who may have different sensitivities surrounding choice of books or music. Inviting others to the house is always a great option, but should a parent rather limit the time the child goes over there or attempt to teach them about differences and ruchnius resilience?
Another complicated question. First of all, Chazal tell us, no two people are the same. Kishem shepatzufeyim. We have different appearances, and we have different mentalities, different outlooks. The Rebbeinu created us that way on purpose. No two snowflakes are exactly alike. Certainly people are not alike. So the child is, how do we embrace differences? I will tell you that, again, borrowing from my own experience, which is not necessarily the answer, but just as an aside, I was a Rebbe and then a Menahel in a school in Toronto called Eitz Chaim. Anyone ever heard of that? Okay, Eitz Chaim in Toronto, which is a community school, right? Community school. And as a functionary of the school, I was obligated by contract to send my kids there. Now, my first four kids were daughters. So I sent them there. Had I not had to, I might have sent them somewhere else, but I sent them there. In the end, years later, and my first, and then my second, and my third, and my fourth, etc., the daughters got engaged. They ended up getting engaged to Ger Chassidim, with the Yantzei Shmoyne Begodim, the Hoizen Lezokin, right? You don't see too much. Shai Abramowitz is still around, right?
Yeah.
Okay. He's a Mechotin, by the way. His brother's a Mechotin of mine. At any rate, so somebody asked me, Shmuel, how were you able to raise in Toronto girls that would be maskin to marry Ger Chassidim? We didn't live in Borough Park or Williamsburg. We lived in Toronto. So I said, it's because I sent them to Eitz Chaim. In other words, the venue in which they got their chinuch was an inclusionary, inclusive or inclusionary kind of environment. Ruchnius has to be inclusionary. It has to be inclusive. Actually, I think I'm sitting next to an individual who not only was raised by and in an environment of which I speak, but whose father, Zalge Zinzan, is one of the world's most famous exemplars of exactly that. And what he's achieved by having that kind of an environment is Ein L'Shayer v'Ein L'Tayer. It's Givaldi. Who were you to say that someone else is slightly better or slightly worse? You're not supposed to judge. Al Togin is Chavercha. By making these kinds of decisions, I don't want you to hang out with Reuven because he's slightly less, or I don't want you to hang out with Leah because she's slightly more modern, or whatever it is. Granted, there have to be limitations and boundaries, right? You don't want them hanging out with Gehenna's Angels, right? The motorcycle gang, right? There's limitations to what we do. But we're talking about tiny nuances. I got to tell you that the more you give a positive concept to your child about what he or she is, the more you, or the less you have to worry about them falling under the influence of someone who's slightly less than they are. This is what we did at home. Again, borrowing from personal experience. Our kids were raised with a sense that we are different maybe than some of the average kids in Eitz Chaim, but they were happy. It was a happy household, it was a happy home. In many respects, we made a point of that. So they were so happy with their self-concept that they weren't enticed by what other parents might have been worried about will be enticements. Be strong about your ruchnis. Be strong about your own self-concept. Be inclusive of other people because that's the way we're supposed to be. And don't worry. On the contrary, by not worrying and allowing a little bit of mingling with others, you are being mechazek, the ruchnius of your child, rather than undermining it.
If I could just add that it's probably important to know your child as well. If you know your child is gravitating towards a certain neighbor or a certain family member because they have something there that they're gravitating to, then you'll let them know it's okay to go there, but remember that you're the role model. Remember that remember your standards. Like Rabbi Klein, pick up their level. Remember who you are, and if you're going, it's important to know the child as well. Rabbi Nurth, how can we get our kids to be organized in eating, homework habits, coming to school on time?
I connected that to the first one.
Next, how can we get our children to say the emes? What should our reaction be when they don't say the emes? How should we react when they do say the emes about something they didn't want? Do we still punish?
Hey. When I received this question, the following story came to mind, which I heard from my Rosh Yeshiva. My Rosh Yeshiva is Rabbi Eliezer Gibber. I remember him saying this 25 years ago, and I called him up last night to verify it. And he says, yes, you remember correctly. He was raised in Monticello. And he told me, he was very young then, he has a twin brother, Chaim Gibber. And the children did something wrong. Maybe they lied, maybe they didn't, but their father wasn't happy. He brought them to the kitchen table and he says as follows, in my family, my children don't lie. My Rosh Yeshiva said to himself, he was 5-6 years old, could you imagine? My father thinks that we don't lie. Then how could I lie? So this is similar to what Rabbi Tursky was saying earlier, that it's not befitting. Our children don't lie. And that's the message that we need to give to them. And if they feel that way, and we lift them up, and we exalt them, they're going to refrain and distance from saying sheker. However, there's one thing I do want to add. We could say that from today to tomorrow. We could be blue in the face and say, you don't lie. You're my child. My child doesn't lie. But I'll bring an example from this week's parasha. Yosef HaTzadik was with Potiphar's wife. He could have stooped to the lowest level a person could stoop to, and it's not his fault. What should he do? And then he saw Diyugno Shalaviv. He saw the appearance of his father in the window. And his father said to him, or didn't say to him, whatever it is, but Yosef just seeing his father made him stop and run away. How did that happen? Only because he saw Yaakov made him stop? How could that be? Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky answers, because there was currency. There was a relationship, a very, very strong relationship between Yaakov Avinu and Yosef. And therefore, just seeing an image of his father in the window could stop him from doing the worst of Averis. How much more so our children? Yeah, we could tell our child and our family, my children doesn't lie. That works if there's currency. There's a relationship. And therefore, we have to work on having that very strong bond and that very strong relationship with our children. And then it will penetrate and they will say, you know something? How could I lie to my mother and my father? Now, about punishing. We try to stay away from punishing. I think that the questionnaire was asking, I want to feel good about myself. I got to punish my child. I caught him lying, so I got to punish him. That's not the way. That's going to distance. Once again, we say the same thing. In our family, we don't lie. I just want to go through examples, a few examples. Let's say, you know, money's missing. Someone took $10, $20, whatever it is. One of the children did it. How do you get it back? Without accusing them, without punishing them. You go to the room, you bring the children in and say, money is missing in the house. I don't care who did it. I just want to make sure that we do the MS. I want to make sure that we return what we took. It doesn't belong to you. Here's an envelope. Just put the money in the envelope. Don't write your name on it and leave it on the table. I'll be back in 10 minutes. If there's the Yukno Shalaviv in our family, that envelope will have the money in it. And trust me, we don't need to know who did it. The one who did it knows, and it's not going to happen, or it's not going to continue to happen. I'll give one more example. In my yeshiva, sometimes I walk into a classroom and a teacher will tell me, this boy stole a ball, football, basketball, with someone else's. What do you think? I'm a referee? I have to figure out who stole someone's football, who stole someone's laser, you know, the laser pointers. I'm not a ref. What do? I take it away, and I say, whoever owns this ball or laser pen, come and retrieve it. And guess what? The owner comes and retrieves it later on in the day. I don't have to be a ref. And I think we can do the same thing in our house. If one of the children say, he stole this, she stole that, okay, come to me and let me know who's the one who really took it. And therefore, we'll alleviate punishing our children or even suspecting them of doing something that is wrong.
If I may add just one point regarding lying. And that is something I think that all of us have already said once. Children learn by example. We cannot expect our children not to lie if they see us lying. So if we tell our child to tell the mashulach at the door that we're not home, then our children will lie. The same applies to many other different types of things that go on in a home. I can tell you from their personal story. When I moved to Chicago, my wife and I decided that we're only going to speak Yiddish to our children. We knew that they're going to talk English to their friends in school, and before long, Yiddish is going to be lost. So we decided we're only going to speak Yiddish to our children. So whenever our children, naturally, the kids started talking English most of the day in school. And when they came home, they would talk to us in English. And the way I dealt with that was, I don't understand what you're saying. So since I didn't understand, they had to repeat it in Yiddish. So I remember Mom was just clear as day. My son, married already, he was 5 years old, sitting on the kitchen floor and playing. And I answered the phone in the house. It was one of my mispalim, and I was naturally talking in English. My five-year-old pipes up and says, "Tati, you're a hypocrite." I dropped the phone, and my jaw dropped to the ground. And I didn't even know he knew the word. I said, "Yankala, what in the world did you do? What's this diat gezogt?" She said, "Whenever I talk to you in English, you tell me you don't understand. You're having a conversation in English." That was the last time I ever did that. It was Baruch Hashem, they all talk Yiddish. But children pick up on everything. And don't think that we could get away with a non-truth without children not picking up. And if we don't speak the truth, we cannot expect them to speak the truth.
I'm also going to take the liberty to be most of something, and that is something a little bit revolutionary, perhaps, and that is that, first of all, Chazal tell us that emes is very rare. That's why the three letters of emes are the extremes of the aleph, aleph and tof, you can't get further apart than that, and the mem right in the middle, whereas sheker are right next to each other. And the Gemara says, because sheker is very shchicha, it's very common. Emes is not. And elsewhere, the Gemara tells us that Rabban Shalom, before he created man, he asked the Malachim, interesting name for Emes, to be one of the Malachim. Should we create man? Emes said, no, don't create man because he's going to be a Shakran. So Kodesh Baruch Hu took the Emes, threw it down, and buried it in the ground. Emes me'eretz titzmach. The Chiddush Arim asked the Katz Rebbe, how do we get the Emes to sprout out from the ground? She says, very poshut. If you bury the Sheker, it will come out. So you have to bury Sheker. But, you know, this is a vertel, the Shaila is there no place in the world for a little bit of sheker? I mean, we do know that there is. If you have two choices, one is to insult someone or to lie, clearly you're supposed to lie. Ketzad meragdin lefnei ha-kala. Now, of course, that's a little bit of a superfluous question because all kalas are talking no of a chasuda, right? Tricked you. Right? I just lied because it's not true. Not every kala is nova chasuda, but we're supposed to say that. Because Maui Ganenu Ba'enu, Vishapchenu Ba'enu, we're supposed to. There is a little bit of sheker. And it's also psychologically sort of okay if a child feels that he has to tell a lie in order to get himself out of a bad situation. Right? We understand that. It's hard always to tell the truth. I think it's a Beferish and Marvelous Midas machine where the. Who spilled the milk on the kitchen floors? And then, not me, right? And the mother says, as long as you mop up, you clean up the spilled milk, but I'm proud of you for telling the truth. In other words, you know, admit that there is a little mokum for not me, but then, you know, the way it evolves, the story evolves, is that the MS surfaces and emerges as something more desirable, but we can't be that great kanoim with little kids. Allow them that little fib. You know, we're assuming that their noses will not grow. One of my favorite stories is not a Jewish story, and it's one that I often repeat. Little Billy was caught stealing in school, so the principal decided to teach him a lesson, called the cop. You know, the educational cop comes with the gun, says, "Shmoyne, we got him to teach Billy a lesson." Cop came, and he says, "Okay, we're going to take you home, young man, and we're going to confront your parents, tell them what you did." He drives up with the child in the police car. The driver, there's a car in the driver, knocks on the door, knocks. After a couple of minutes, the door opens, and the father looks like he was wearing a bathrobe, must have been stepped out of the shower, and around his neck, there's a towel that says, "Holiday Inn." You know, so we do learn from example. Go ahead.
And if interventions were tried, and it doesn't work, and our children would still continue to lie or steal, sometimes it's a symptom of an emotional underlying diagnosable disorder that is very treatable. So it's something that should be consulted with a mental health professional. Rabbi Twersky, how can parents help children develop self-confidence?
We did that already.
Oh, okay. How should we handle peer pressure
When a child wants to do what others do or have what others have, and I don't want him to have or to do what others do.
I'm going to go back to role model and examples. First of all, children need to feel secure. In order for children to feel secure, they need to grow up in a healthy environment. If we're going to tell our children no to anything, they have to be able to trust us that is the best decision for them. In order for that trust to exist, there's got to be a sense of respect that children have for parents. If there's any sense of, we often wonder why children disrespect us, and often we blame it on the child, where in reality, we should be looking into ourselves and wondering why it's natural for children to respect parents. Why isn't my child respecting me? We need to make sure that we're not sending mixed messages to our children. Children will lose respect for parents if the parents are inconsistent. One day they say this, one day they say the other. If we send our children to school and in school they learn one way, and then they come home and it's the standards are totally are much less than what they're taught in school. The children won't necessarily respect the parents if their Rebbe or a teacher has just told them that their parents' conduct is not acceptable. We have to choose the moisa that we send our children to. We should adapt positively to the way to the moisa that we are sending our children to. If we send our children to shul, where the rav is going to get up and say that this and this is the appropriate conduct, and the parents are not going to go along with that, we have to understand that that's going to make an impact on our child. Our child is wondering, why isn't Tati or Mommy doing what the rav just said? This all just came back because the question Rabbi Tenenbaum just asked, I just brought back a story just a few weeks ago. I got a call from a parent with a child on the phone saying, Rabbi, we need to ask you a question. It's Black Friday. And our child is looking at the Target, what's it called?
Flyer.
Huh?
The flyer.
The flyer of Target, and he wants this and this for his Black Friday present. And we want to know if this is appropriate for our child to have this. So I told the father to get the child off the phone. I said to him, why in the world does this child, why is he getting something for Black Friday? Why does he even know that it's Black Friday? And why is he looking through a Target flyer? Did you look through the flyer to make sure that there's nothing objectionable there before he's looking through it? And before you ask me whether the child should get the thing that he wants, did you ask me whether you should get your new car? Did you ask me whether you should get your new gadget? Children learn by example. And if you're getting the new thing, and if you're getting if you're trying to live up to everybody that's around you, because of your peer pressure, then why shouldn't the child do the same thing? There is, Rabbi Klein just mentioned before, raising kids in Toronto with your own kids having different standards than others. Children, I can tell you from a personal experience, children feel very honored to have higher standards if you make them feel that way. And if they want something that is below, beneath the standards, you can tell the child, that's not something we do. We have different standards. We don't want to put other, and we want to put anybody else down. We just raise our standards. I tell my children all the time, that's not our hechsher. We have different standards in kasher. This is not our hechsher. Everybody else in class gets this kind of candy. The rebbeim give it out. My children are very proud to say it's not my hechsher. I had a story when my daughter was in nursery in Beis Yaakov. In nursery, there's no uniform yet. So in the summer, the minhag in our family is that the girls, from when they're 3 years old, they wear tights and long sleeves. We're abusive parents. And my wife is getting my daughter dressed one morning in the summer, and my daughter says to her, you know, I'm the only one in the class that wears long sleeves and tights. That's all she said. My wife could tell that it bothered her. My wife told her, but that's, you know, that's the way we dress, that's why I dressed when I was a child, and Bobby dressed when she was a child. Nevertheless, you could see that it was something that bothered her. So my wife called, was it my wife or was I? I think it was me, actually. I called Mrs. Murek. She was the principal then. And I said to Mrs. Murek, you know, I told her the story. I said, can you, you know, give Chevy a good word? When she's in school today, about the way she's dressed. So just, you know, boost her a little bit. Chevy came home from school beaming. She was, mama, if she wouldn't have ears, her smile would have touched. So, I said to her, what happened in school today? She said, Mrs. Murek came into class. And she called me to the front of the class. And she told me to get up on a chair. And she said, Kinderlich, this is the way a Bas Yisrael is supposed to dress. It made a tremendous difference. And she never asked again to be like anyone else. It became a matter of covet for her. And I think whenever there's peer pressure, again, the first thing we need to look at is ourselves and how we give it. If we give in to our peer pressure, then we shouldn't be demanding anything less of our children, anything more of our children. But if we're being good role models, I don't think there's any reason why we need to give in to our kids' peer pressure. Just make them feel good about what they are and who they are and about what they have.
Shabbos question. My wife and I have the following disagreement. Okay, the other building. Go one more question.
Okay, session is over. This is over innings. But sometimes the kids want to stay up later. What do you do? You know, you learn.
No. My wife and I have the following disagreement in regards to the Shabbos table. She feels that we are trying to have a Torah at home. There should be plenty of Torah discussions at the Shabbos table. I, on the other hand, believe to just let the kids chill and have a quality time without the classroom feel. I'm not against saying it about Torah, but the overall feeling should be relaxed. My wife says that you can play parsha games and have it both ways.
It's late, so I'll try to be brief. Number one, don't have disagreements with your wife. That's number one. Number two, if you do, then as a senator, it's a sort of lolifne hayelet. You know, keep it. That's, by the way, a very important parenting inyan, not to have those disagreements. As far as Shabbos is concerned, Shabbos isn't stam another thing. You know, Shabbos is shkula keneged kol mitzvahs. Shabbos is as weighty as all the other mitzvahs combined. If you keep Shabbos, then you're keeping everything. If you don't keep Shabbos, I'll tell you something. The Vision Sereba said, the Yeshias Yankov, the father of today's Vision Sereba, she's Moshe. He said like this: somebody who doesn't keep Shabbos properly, it's not Shabbos that he's losing his Olam Haba, he's losing his Olam Hazeh. I mean, I can be markov on that, but there's no time for that. We just imagine what it would be to live life without Shabbos. We can't even imagine it. So Shabbos is kingpin. When it comes to parenting, it's like the foundation of the foundations. Which means it has to be played right, it has to be done right. And that requires balance. I will share with you, there's a tshuva from the Night of Yehuda that says if a father is makbet to ferher his kids on Shabbos of what they learned during the course of the week, he's possibly being mechal Shabbos. Forget about being a bad parent. Because if the child doesn't know everything properly, the father and the child will end up having a lack of Simchas Shabbos, of Oinei Shabbos. So it can't be that kind of a strict mood. There should be Divrei Torah, riddles, questions, things to tantalize, the things to get them to think a little bit more deeply, avada and avada. But the main thing is the Simcha that you have by a tish. The main thing is the kovid that will be ascribed to the Suda Shabbos, which includes, and I know I think this is one of the other questions, but we're not going to get there, includes the idea of every child having a makom kavua, a kavis, that's my place. That's something that he ascribes to the chashivas of Shabbos. This is my place on the Suda Shabbos. During the week, you can sit here, you can sit there. But Shabbos is my place. And even if you have a rotation, that becomes the kavis also. But the mood should be definitely one of simcha, organized simcha, happy simcha. And if something stares them, don't punish them. I once had, when my kids were little, I told them, please stop doing what you're doing. If not, then I'm leaving the table and I'll go into the kitchen. They tested my patience and I did that. And they were tzibrochen. 5 minutes later, of course, I was back in the dining room and I never had that issue again. But I didn't punish them. Well, I did, with guilt. Okay, but that's a sneaky Jewish kind of a punishment, which is okay. But make sure that the chashivas of Shabbos, one of the Gedolei Yisrael, whose name I will not mention, had a Ben Yochid who ended up going either completely off the derech or became very, very modern. And years later, Oter Badorot, he lamented the fact that he himself inadvertently brought his son to going off the derech, because when it came to Suda Shabbos, he was busy learning a Rambam with the Magen Mishnah and the Kesef Mishnah, and I said, Caleb, learning Iyun on a Rambam by the Suda on Friday night, instead of singing his mirrors of that son. Shabbos is the Mekar HaBrocha. Shabbos is the source of all blessings. You want to raise children to be happy Yidden? You have to nitzoy, squeeze out. I think Rabbi Neuwirth said the image of squeezing out grapes. Was it you? Yeah. It's Rabbeinu Yoina, by the way. It's a cheshivas of the grape that you're squeezing. Anyway, it's fine. Squeeze everything you can out of the Shabbos, because it's meroimem, it's a mekar habrocha. Make it full of simcha, make it full of zmiras. Divrei Torah also, but that should definitely not be the ikir by your Shabbos table. Let the kids look forward to it. Let them not be forced into compliance with your set of rules, but let them look forward to it. Make it eager for them. Make them feel that this is their oilem hazeh, like the Yeshiyas Moshe. I'm going to conclude because, in addition to being one of the panelists, I'm also a representative of Torah Mitzvah. And Torah Mitzvah was really, together with Rabbi Muller, I got to say with the Menayel, we planned the event. And I have to, first of all, give Shevach Voido to Rabbi Muller for understanding the urgency of these sessions, not because his parent body is lacking, no, but because that's the society in which we live. There's an urgency. We have to improve what we can do. It's not like it used to be. I remember back in the day, the word parent was only a noun. Today it's a verb, right? Think about that, okay. So I'm being Shabech Rabbi Mullen for taking the bull by the horns. And I know that tonight, and there was a back and forth between the two of us about the date for tonight. It seemed in the end there was no braver but to do it tonight. And I know that we were fighting against or competing against a couple of other community functions. Baruch Hashem, it's a happening place, Chicago. Ashreichem v'toyv lechem. But I want to give a special thanks to all those who came, despite the fact that maybe you did have other things, despite the fact that it's cold. Rabbi Muller's in Montreal, he knows what cold is. I'm from Toronto, I know what cold is. And this is cold, this is a cold night tonight. So Yeshua Kodesh for coming. May it be not only that the Shabbos is the macabre, it's not that cold you're saying, right? It's true, but it's still cold enough for people to say, let me just sit in the house. Al Kopanim, may not only the Shabbos be a macabre bracha, may the Chicago Yeshiva Teferes Tzvi, ATT, Parenting Initiative be makar bracha for us all, for you all. May should have nachas from all your kinderlich, and us from our kinderlich, and the yeshiva from its kinderlich, and we should all be makabel panim Mashiach to change them here. Amen. Amen.
All right.
I want to finish up, but there are many other questions that were not asked. The goal, as I started off earlier, is the communication piece. Feel free to ask questions. No question is offensive. No question is insulting. Fine. Feel comfortable anytime to call any rough or and we'll be happy to answer questions. Please sign in the back. There's a sign in. Give a get sign in, and the Rabbana will be available for questions.
The roof is okay again as a mile zooked by my
brother. Lakewood.
I don't know
who that guy's story is.
I remember the embarrassing.
That's not kosher.
Works
for the Jews, works for them.
Comfortable?
I was happy to hear you mention Rev Putner on his yard sign.
Today's his yard sign?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
I wasn't going to raise
tonight,
my hand.
Tonight? Tonight, tomorrow? Chav.
Tonight.
Wow.
It's a simon that we're doing things lishmo, according to the Vilna Gaon, it's a simon.
You have available for a question?
Sure. Here's a question.